Let's just do an hour of awkward eye contact. And then take off our shoes and interlock our toes.
I mean, there was a lot of awkwardness this weekend.
Yeah.
We just came back from Jalisco. Mm-hmm. Eddie, is that the closest you've gotten to actual, like, fully cartel controlled territory?
In terms of being in a very controlled area. Yes.
Yeah.
In terms of spiciness with them, probably not.
Yeah.
But being like kind of surrounded by them and in their area, yeah, that was probably most. Yeah.
We went down there with our friend Johnny Mitchell. For some reason, we've become these fixers, these people that get some of these guys out there to have some of these meetings and interview some pretty interesting people. I, through my previous job and just the networking that this awesome platform has provided us, and my recent appearances on Gaffa's platform, we've gotten access to some pretty wild people and some wild stories. We went down there and interviewed a few people from the underworld, including one kid who, as of, like, I think he escaped 8 months ago, apparently. He was an active sicario for...
Did he escape or was he let go?
He was let go by a very kind member of his leadership, apparently.
That's what he says anyway.
But he was basically active for a few months. And he got to see, I mean, a first person view of what is actually going on out there.
I didn't even listen to the interview with him. I think I was asleep on the couch, to be honest, but
well, that's not a pretty good advertising for the interview, I guess. Eddie was running. Me and Eddie got to Jalisco in the morning, the day before, I think, or something like that, right?
Was it Thursday or Friday?
I think it was that morning.
Yeah, Friday morning. It was Friday morning. Yeah,
and we basically hit the ground and went on this wild treasure hunt for weird old occult items.
Yeah,
we went to one of the oldest witches market in Jalisco.
What is that? It's called the
San Juan de Dios, El Mercado San Juan de Dios.
But they call it something. They call it something for. They call it something. There's a short name for it. I forget what it is.
I don't remember. But like, it's basically that's where all the.
There is a lot of them there. There's a lot of these. Would you call them like botanicas? Yeah, is that what you would call each one?
I mean, there was the guy that was selling these manta rays.
Yeah.
That were dried and cut into the shape of an alien body.
I put it in my bar already too.
It
smells.
Eddie is a fan of tiki bars. And as soon as I found that out, I told him, like, yeah, in Mexico, sometimes they sell these manta rays cut into the shape of alien bodies and they dry them out. They look like alien mummies.
It looks like an alien.
So yeah, Eddie has introduced me into this whole tiki bar thing.
It's where old punk rockers go to die. That's the best way to describe the tiki scene.
For me, it's like I don't drink anymore, and every now and then I just like enjoying no alcohol fake margarita type deal. And I've discovered that tiki bars are apparently very good at making some pretty interesting cocktails that have non-alcoholic content in them. And also the vibe is always great.
Yeah, it's like just silly but chill at the same time.
Yeah,
it's fun.
You have a pretty cool tiki bar of your own.
I do.
And when I saw it, I was like, I need to get you. In Mexico, they dry out manta rays and they cut them into the shape of alien bodies, because why not? And they dry them out and they sell them as curios. I hadn't seen one in years. And I was like trying. I told you, I'm going to get you one of these.
They made a comeback.
So when we the first day we got to Jalisco, we went to this witch's market. We have this botanica, online botanica now on Steak Reaper Industries that is run by a few people. And we basically, every time we travel, we try and look out for just weird
stuff you won't find in pretty much anywhere else. Like those wooden ones are, you'll probably never see those wooden ones ever.
Yeah, like we found these wooden Santa Muerta statues that are like, but we also use them as a way to network. And it's amazing that some of these specific shops and places are frequented by members of other alternative lifestyles. So at least I always use it to kind of network and ask questions about the area and kind of who's who. While I was walking through this place, there's giant devil statues with giant dongs.
Thickness.
Dongs. There's a surprising amount of them, these naked devil statues.
Has that always been is that a more recent thing? Like,
yeah, that's...
Why is it? Why all of a sudden girthy... really girthy devils.
I mean,
they're never even like if you're gonna do a devil statue, like they make them like almost kind of smaller. Like the devil's like, and most of these statues are like 6'5", right? Yeah. But then his girthy ass penis is only like 4 inches long. Like you would think a 6'5" devil, that motherfucker is slitting his knees shit.
Some of them come with like a detachable one.
Oh.
So you install it. It's very, there's a neo-Luciferian cult in central Mexico called the Cult of the Black Angel, o el Angelito Negro.
Is that what devil worshiping is? Is that devil worshiping?
It's kind of this new neo-devil worshiping thing.
Like, but why the penis? Why not just like have them in some Speedos?
Because I guess they've incorporated a lot of, esoteric iconography into their faith practices, and they usually use Baphomet, the figure of Baphomet, this goat god that has a lot of lower energy symbolism on him, basically. They use that as a reference for what they do. And
do you think they use...
Again, a penis is basically a good representation of the earthly and the lower energy.
I think I figured it out. So there's the devil statues are always girthy.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Like not kind of short for their bodies. So do you think the artists are just like looking down, like looking down at their own Mexican penis and
probably.
Now, if it was a Puerto Rican guy doing this, it'd be even smaller probably actually. We're pretty much black.
I must interfere there and tell you that we held the record for the world's longest, but non-functional though, but it was the world's biggest.
Oh, that's true.
Biggest.
I forgot about
penis,
that.
Which coincidentally, he's somewhere in Saltillo.
He's still alive?
Yeah, he lives in Saltillo. It's called the Centaur of the North, I think they call him or something like that. He's like famous. I don't know if he grants. We could go interview him. Like we were just in Saltillo.
You trying to interview a guy or record a guy with the world's biggest penis?
He can touch his forehead with it.
Oh, bless his heart.
I don't think it's functional. Has
he
used that?
Has he put it on his own lips? Would you?
Probably. I don't know. Maybe.
But if you did it, would you admit that, like, if somebody asked you, like, have you ever put your giant penis
in
your
mouth? I would deny it immediately, of course. Yeah. And then late at night, I would just do it double that night, you know?
Is that gay?
Probably.
Make you part of the homosexual community?
If that makes you LGBTQ
plus alphabet 4-9.
I mean, yeah, maybe. I mean, you're a dude, but masturbation should be also make you. You're also using a body part of yours to, right? Dude, I'm confused.
What I taste like.
I'm very
confused. Honest, I don't want to know.
Why do we get there? Oh, the devils. Oh, there's a bunch of devils.
I bet you that the devil's dick tastes like chamoy.
Probably. Yeah. They actually give them offerings of like weird candy sometimes. So according to what I've seen, the offerings to the devil in these places are usually in the form of meat and red wines and chamois. So I don't know. It's this weird new cult that's all over Mexico. These basically it's devil worshiping, basically. And they sometimes dress them really fancy for some reason. Ever seen that?
No, because every devil I've seen has been naked with a
but there's
girthy
some
penis.
There's some that are like short. They're like
the children ones.
Yeah, like
I've seen it where they dress them up and they put them in nice clothes.
Yeah. Like,
but I've never seen a full size one. Like,
yeah. It's weird. I mean, we're gonna go down there apparently in a few days. And we're gonna be like, that's where some of the stuff has been kind of showing up in the culture, in the underworld in Mexico. Walking around there, that's where I found your alien, mm-hmm. which is gonna look fucking cool on your wall. And then we went to Goffa's studio, mm-hmm. Interviewed. I was interviewed for a second time by him, basically. Last time I was on his platform, Goffa is basically kind of like the, I don't know.
Would you say he's like the, how in terms of YouTube, Mexican YouTubers, he's pretty high up there. Like, would you say the top, like.
He's one of the top YouTubers.
Like top 100, top 50,
yeah,
top 45.
He's one of the top 50 YouTubers in Mexico easily. And he's very much at the top of his genre. Like I never seen anybody kind of focus a lot on kind of the specific military and also like cartel issues from the perspective of as somebody that has fought that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's Armapedia and there's him, but it, like last time I was on his platform. We predicted a lot of stuff that turned out to be pretty spot on. So we kind of revisited that conversation and talked about what's coming next. We're talking about this unease within the Mexican government and the culture in general, where it is basically thinking that it's already in this soft invasion by the U.S. and that. You know, every time something happens, it's blamed on the CIA because that's the paranoia that's going on right now with the culture. And yeah, people are very nervous about the neighbors in the north.
We want your shit. We want your resources.
I've heard the whole resource.
Give me your gold, leprechaun.
The U.S. produces way more oil right now, so I'm not worried about that.
You got that lithium, though, we want. Mm.
I think more than anything, I think Mexico is about to become the industrial plant for the United States. China is on its way out and they're looking for an option. But before they can utilize that, they need to stabilize that. They need to gain control of it. And then they just don't trust the government here to follow through with its commitments to security. And I don't know what's going to happen. And it's pretty kind of, it's a thing that is on everybody's minds right now as we speak and as we've been going around Mexico and all the people that I've been talking to, the conversation in their minds about the United States and a possible invasion or intervention, military intervention is, it's there.
As long as we can still get tacos at,
yeah,
Especial, then
yeah, I mean,
it's all that.
They should be exempt somehow.
They should be neutral.
It should be neutral. Yes. You like, we should have like blue helmets.
They should be protected outside of the taco space. They should be protected like the altars are in Tepito.
Oh yeah, you don't mess with those. Yeah, and then
I played cameraman all day. What was that, Friday or
yeah? How was
Saturday?
That? How was that?
That sucked because I had to use just a regular handheld because I didn't know how to use the gimbal.
Yeah,
and I didn't want to mess it up, bro.
It's a heavy camera.
The camera weighs like 25 pounds. It was hot as hell. Then we started climbing up on a roof and they were painting and I grabbed the whole damn thing with my hand. I had paint all over my hands and then I'm like touching my face and my backpack and paint's getting everywhere.
You guys went to film outside of the place where Kiki Camarena was tortured and killed.
That's now a monastery.
Is it? It's a kindergarten. Like, I heard it was a Montessori kindergarten or school of some sort.
I tried to have them let us in, but they're like
very...
No gracias.
I mean, it's a place that a lot of people visit, probably, and a lot of people take selfies outside of it. I know it's been in a few, like... it's been in a few documentaries around the Kiki Camarena murder. Interesting. I mean, we went there the second day to film a few more things, and I was talking to people around the area. It's funny how Mexicans were like, "Hey, so what do you think about the extradition of Carlos Quintero, the guy who killed Kiki Camarena?" Like, yeah. They're like, "No, it was the CIA." Mm-hmm. Like, everybody there says the CIA did it. And, you know, it's like, this cultural difference, I guess. And asking my opinion about it, I don't know. Like, I don't know. It was before my time, but probably.
When did all that happen?
That was the 70s, 80s. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, this is a while ago. And the influence that this has had, still has in the area. While we were down there, there was a murder of four consulate employees, U.S. consulate employees as well. The violence is low key happening around the area. The TikToker, female TikToker.
Oh, yeah. That happened literally the day before we got there. Yeah,
the day before we got there. But you would think it's going to be a very hot zone, like Guadalajara metropolitan area is calm.
No, it's nice. So what I noticed, the big difference that I noticed between Guadalajara and TJ is Guadalajara, everybody, it's like a normal normal area, and people are walking their dogs. And in TJ, the dogs are just walking everywhere. Like, there's no collars, there's no leashes. I almost hit one on the way here.
Yeah, we have a lot of wild. We have a lot of
they're dogs wild.
Running around. Yeah, they're wild. And also the funny thing, a lot of these dogs, poor dogs. They like it.
No, they're thriving.
They get fed by everybody. Everybody's kind of cool with them. You know,
they have their routines.
They have their routines. But yeah, that's definitely a difference. But the place, in general, it's pretty calm.
Yeah, it seemed like it's. Would you say there's more cartel activity in Guadalajara or TJ?
I think it's probably more there. But it's
weird. But it seems safer.
It's controlled, though.
But yeah. TJ, it's like anarchy, kind of. It's just like so much going on. Like,
it's being fought over. And over there, I think it's pretty much settled who owns it. And it's more of a, you know, if there is violence, it's usually people who are working or have gone out of the bounds of whatever rule sets there are. That's my perception.
So you think it's because Guadalajara is pretty much taken over, and TJ, they're still fighting for.
Yeah, I think Tijuana's still up in the air. It's hard to have.
So if one takes over, has one ever took over?
Yeah, there used to be the Tijuana cartel was Arellano was the main cartel.
Was it calm then? Was it like Guadalajara calm?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
The phenomenon of the narco juniors, basically rich kids going into that cartel and kind of having a low key control over industry and also drugs and everything else that was going on. It all ended when they got into a war with El Chapo and his side of the cartel. Which I think we're still kind of going through some aspects of it. But this kid that we interviewed, this Sicario,
20-year-old kid, 20 years old.
I'm not gonna ruin the interview. It's gonna be out on Johnny's platforms. But he just in general,
I couldn't. So I probably would have listened to it if I could, but in the monitoring room. Only the AV tech had headphones, so I couldn't really listen. So it's like you're just watching mimes at that point. So I was falling asleep.
The amount of like direct experience and questions you can ask somebody like him who just left was like pretty great. So I was,
he had the eyes too.
Yeah.
Yeah. The eyes. Highly, like, highly. Like it was like he didn't blink. He was just like,
this is PTSD. Like I'd recognize that. He spoke about his training, which was, I mean, it's horrific. I think what got to me was him speaking about, and, you know, I can speak about this. It's going to be in that interview probably, but he spoke about downing a helicopter. Not him specifically, but how they've downed helicopters in the regions he was operating.
What do they use?
They're depending on these things to fly low, and they're shooting at it with 50 cals with glass on them. So I asked him first off, like, hey, we always see these 50 cal rifles out there. I mean, can you actually shoot them, or are you just, you know, just shooting them
for pictures
and just like, and he says, no, like we have people there that show us how to install the sight and how to zero in that sight. And he explained how, and it's, yeah, they have people showing them that. He mentioned many times that there are military advisors that they have there around them. Who, and some of them seemed to have a Pocho accent, basically somebody from the U.S. who learned Spanish from a like second generation Mexican, basically. So that probably are some sort of veteran, like military veterans of some sort out there, showing them things. And he specifically spoke about the fighting, how the experience of fighting armored, like they were, like he was at one point he was driving around one of those armored, the monstros, those
like home built ones,
the home built monstros, and he was explaining how they're used, like how combat occurs in them, and I've never heard this before, but apparently the best way to take because they basically do like a bumper car warfare. They'll take a truck, armor it, and armor a box in the back. That's where all the shooters are. So,
and they just give them portholes?
The shooters will pop out with 50 cals and shoot at each other. And they try and disable each other's vehicle by ramming them with the back part of their car, because that won't fuck up their engine.
Basically Mad Max.
It's fucking Mad Max what they're fucking talking about. So
did he, without giving too much away, did he say specifically like what his job was? Like, did he have a certain job?
He was a sicario. So for them, a sicario is a shooter.
He's a shooter.
You're not going to go and be a cool assassin somewhere in the metropolitan area. And no, a sicario
like that Uber driver was, though, or that Uber motorcycle Uber guy that got that girl.
But for them, it is like a base. It's basically a ground fighter, a soldier. So he was in the front lines in Zacatecas, is kind of where I got the gist of where he was. And he was also like in the mountains, just guarding like plantations and laboratories, like all safe houses and stuff like that.
Do they get to call their family or anything?
No.
So it's like they're joining Scientology.
It is basically
cartelology.
It's very, very space, very, very spicy. So they get recruited from like Facebook, TikTok. They see these videos where they're basically,
yet they won't
advertising.
Yet they won't promote my listings.
No. Like they shadow ban my shit. But somehow like advertisements for cartels are fine. But he said he basically learned about how to, you know, they offered it. He said they offered 8,000 to 10,000 pesos a week, or a bit more than that.
What's that what is that roughly in dollars?
I don't know. You're gonna have to do that conversion right now, but it's I don't know. It's better than what he was earning as an Uber driver.
Okay.
And when he got there, obviously the number changed.
Lower, right?
Yeah, way lower.
They're like, just kidding. It's 50 pesos.
Way lower, and also they charge him for everything.
What the?
Like you're in the mountains and you're fucking camped out there protecting this field.
They're like, oh, you need a tent.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, you need a jacket now, yes. Even though we left you naked?
Yeah. Oh, you need a lighter bulletproof vest? Oh, you need more magazines? So it's...
That's a good deal. That's smart.
It's a whole economy. It's a whole smart. Internal economy. Anyways. Yeah, his story was wild. The amount of just live details that we got from him as far as...
At any point, did you think it was... so you probably went into it thinking, let me see if this is bullshit or not.
Oh, yeah.
Like, within how many minutes did you be like, nope, this is real?
I wanted to take this opportunity to thank each and every one of our Patreon members for their generous support. It's the only way we can bring some of these amazing people behind the microphone and have some of these amazing Midnight of the Soul conversations for you guys. If you're not already a part of the Patreon community, please consider joining us. We have our giant online training catalog for you guys to have access to, as well as some exclusive Sneak Reaper Industries merch drops for you guys at the Dead Drop tier. I would also like to thank the company Sneak Reaper Industries, one of our main supporters and a company that provides some of the most amazing urban wear, survival specific, and cutlery out there. Your support not only makes this show possible, but also supports some of the charities that we run, including the Fighter's Kitchen out of Puerto Escondido, where we're supporting some up-and-coming fighters under the tutelage of Eddie Farrell. Thank you for your support, and again, please consider joining us on the Patreon. And now back to the show.
He explained at one point how they got him to basically prove that he was there for the right reasons. With somebody.
Are you gonna say, or are you gonna leave that for the...
I'm gonna leave that. But basically, somebody tried to escape.
Ooh.
And the penalty for that is, and that's how he proved himself. He was also somebody who had already been interviewed by Gafe, and he has his way of verifying people. I have my way of verifying people, and this kid's. I mean, you're gonna have to listen to that conversation on Johnny's platform.
It'd be an interesting one.
But there is no grand. There's nothing grandiose about what he says. It's very painful, and he speaks about it with pain. There's no boasting that I could see.
Why do you think what? Why would he go on and talk about it?
That's a great question. I saw you see release with people
because they just need to tell somebody.
Yeah, there's nothing for them. There's nothing for the people in the military or the police as well. Like, as far as trauma goes, there's nothing there. There's alcoholism, and there
doesn't seem like there's much in the U.S. either with the VA. So,
There's way
but at more, least there's something.
There's way more. There's way more than here. I think more so than anything, there's a lot of guilt and pain behind it, and a lot of solitude with it.
He was a good. He was. I almost said a good kid, but he was a nice kid. He was.
Yeah, you could walk.
He was
by
good
him.
To us. He was nice. You would never know.
You would never know.
Just a young kid, like, yeah, party kid.
Yeah.
Super respectful. Super.
Super nice. Nice. Super respectful. Yeah. Like solid.
He had them eyes.
He had them eyes, and his main. And again, like, I recognize this shit, and I've had people here that have the same thing. Across cultures, across wars, it doesn't matter. They all complain about the same thing. Sleep.
They can't sleep?
They can't sleep. This insomnia, this painful insomnia.
Did he talk about while he was asleep any better when he first was there? Or is it just it just stops when you join?
So he said, and this is what really got me. We talked offline after it finished. You know, it's like I had to, he broke down a little bit. So I had to talk to him a bit. He said that when he was out there, he would dream about being back home and all that shit being a nightmare. And now that he's out, he dreams that he's out there, and that's his nightmare. which is
that's rough,
fucking rough. And also, like, my brain hurt when I heard him kind of explain it that way.
There ain't no melatonin gonna take that away.
No, I mean, it's basically this time. Like when somebody has a trauma like that, and again, I'm speaking from my own experience, like in a dream, in a vision, in waking life, or just in a triggering event, you're there again. So he goes there a lot at night, apparently. I mean, it was.
I mean, everything's got its.
Everything's
got its consequences. Yeah, you're gonna get away for free.
And it's a price. But yeah, we made it back. I'm semi-alive. I have this weird cold going on. You don't, because you have Wolverine powers.
Let me tell you why. Let me tell you why. I don't ever get sick, and I make this available to you, but you never do it. This is how, look at,
self-care,
this is my sucks. This is my PSA. All right, this is what you do. So for you guys that travel a lot, or you go on vacations a lot, or you have to go to conventions where there's a lot of people, this is what you do. One, you bring airborne with you. So the minute you're around a lot of people on a plane or whatever, you take three of those things every single day. Then when you say I'm at a convention, you shower in the morning, go do the convention, come back to your room, shower again, and then go out and party, and then go back to the hotel, wash your balls, clean again, drink. Hold on. Give me that shit. Let me see it though right now, because... Let me see it. Look at this. Is what you? This is how.
It's all I had, dude. This it's is all how. Fucking had.
And I offered to bring him Dayquil. Shower multiple times when you're around a lot of people, if possible. But in Guadalajara, there was barely any time to fucking eat. Like, yeah, we were literally like, dude. When I wasn't because I didn't want to like seem like a bitch. But when I was walking around with our guide and I would say probably. I would call him probably my bodyguard for the day. When we were walking around downtown Guadalajara, I was like fucking losing it, dude. Like, I was dehydrated like a motherfucker. It was like 90 degrees, but like 100% humidity. And we had been like fucking basically rucking for a couple miles because we were walking everywhere. And dude, I was getting dehydrated like motherfucker. I hadn't eaten yet. So, and they're just like charging away. I'm like, dude, I need some. Yeah. Food. But yeah, I was like I'm probably gonna pass out at some point here if I don't get some fucking water. But we already talked about this, but I think the most spiciest moment was when we haven't talked about that yet, but when we were in the, what would you call that? Would you call that like the slums of Guadalajara? Like, what would that be?
That's
like
are
a
not
rural slum. Area. Like, what? Yeah, what? Because I was trying to explain this to somebody, and I didn't know like what to call that area. Like, what would you call it?
It's a town. Where
it doesn't look like a town though. It looks like
it's. But that's what it is. It's a town that is owned and governed, not by the government. That's why we didn't see a single police officer or military.
That's
member.
True. I didn't see one cop in that area. But granted, too, in Guadalajara, you don't see, like in TJ here, every time you turn your head, you see a cop car.
Yeah.
Or a cop truck. In Guadalajara, you might go like 4 hours without seeing a cop car.
Yeah. It's not as big as a police presence. And out there where we were, which we can't say exactly where we were actually. For security purposes, but we were dead in the center of controlled territory. That's the police we saw were all those kids riding around on the motorcycles with the radios on. That's the police there.
They were young too,
and
like maybe 18.
Yeah. We were also told by our guide that the days of overt cartel guys running around with vests on and rifles in those types of towns is gone. The standing order is to be discreet. So they said that rifles are at the ready and people are at the ready to defend, but there's nobody running around or rolling around publicly displaying rifles.
They don't need to. There's no
to keep one.
Or maybe.
I mean, one, to keep the government off their trail.
Mm-hmm.
they know when they are aware that there are government efforts to try and quell that type of shit. So it just makes it even harder for them to be spotted or seen or singled out. But there's no way government could go into that town without being immediately spotted and people being informed about it. Well, that whole town is basically owned.
And two, you're fucked. If you roll in there, there's the exits are not like,
yeah,
you're going to be surrounded like really quick. There's no like, you're just fucked.
Yeah,
The way it's set up is like, it's you're.
We saw a guy on a Razor. Remember that guy?
Mm-hmm.
This Razor running
sound
around.
System.
Yeah, pretty cool one, and a truck behind it, all blacked out.
I saw that twice. I saw that with one Razor with a truck, and then another Razor, then another white truck.
Yeah, basically they were guarding somebody.
I guess I can't give away too much, but it sounded like a good time. Tell you that much.
Yeah,
it sounded like they were having a good time,
having a great time. But the thing is, again, the amount of fucks given about people, outsiders, they don't give a shit because they're in control of the area. Like, that's their space. There's foreigners living in the area, people moving in and out.
Really? In that area?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of foreigners living there. Because
the hide or?
I mean, I saw a few Russian people that were pretty out of place there.
I have a question. So, I've noticed, like, being here more, that there's like, I don't know Mexico well enough, but I've seen like a lot of, not a lot, but I've noticed like a good amount of black people. Like, are they expats or are they just like generational born? Like,
I mean, we have a lot of Haitians that were pretty
recent. Maybe that's
pretty recent.
Okay.
But that's pretty recent. We have Afro Mexicans like way back when. So like we have a lot of that. But yeah, we have a lot of Americans, African Americans, who have moved down and kind of like melded into some of those expat communities as well.
I know that they're here, but like white expats, never see them. But I know there are like a lot of them here.
Yeah.
They just don't come out or what?
I don't know. I mean, or they go and kind of stick to the more expat community. Like, yeah. I don't know. But out there, it was pretty surreal. Just the...
it was...
If you get caught there by them with a baggie of drugs that isn't marked... that isn't from them, they'll know, and you will be beaten or you will be made to tell them who sold you that, and it is going to be an issue. It's wild. It is completely integrated, just like some of these, you know, Italian
What on my nose?
Just like some of the Italian like mafia shit. Like
is that down here?
No, but it's like it. You like in the past it was this cartel force. They're all armed. They're all rolling around in trucks. They control this area. The way they're doing it now is that they have their armies who are concentrated and are hidden and or in the hills. But
they're just learning better tactics.
Oh, they just became. Yeah,
Mexican gray men.
Something like that. I mean, they're adapting to this more overt effort by the military to try and get at them. But also, like in many of the conversations we heard, they said that they're fully integrated with the military because most of their instructors and the people there who are training them are from the military. So in a lot of ways, those people still have contact to them. So it's like this never-ending cycle of being able to outsmart the people that are hunting them because they're being trained by people from the people that are hunting them. So it's wild.
I've heard in the past where, like, I know it happened a lot during COVID, where the cartels were really, like, taking care of these little towns and villages. I wonder if that went on at all where we were.
Yeah.
We
spoke to a school head of one of these organizations, basically somebody that would take care of a training site for them. And he was explaining that any need in the community would be, there would be a petition by these people to somebody who was running that space, and they would resolve.
At least they did that.
Like, yeah, you would get like, I need a fridge, I need a microwave, I need this to be taken care of, I need that being taken care of. Adultery is punishable by death in some of these communities. So I don't know.
It's weird how like they have certain values, but then there's other values.
Yeah, I mean,
like, oh, there I go killing again, and then like, better not cheat on your wife, motherfucker.
Yeah, or stealing in some of these small communities. You steal something there, you get caught. Cops ain't coming. You're probably not going to be able to clap.
It felt very much, and I even told this to you. I said, this is pretty much the Wild Wild West on your, and you were like, yeah, this is about as close as you're going to get.
Yeah, I mean,
to the Wild Wild West.
The next side of it, or the more wild part of it, would be if we went to some of the places where these groups are actually fighting it out. We heard stories of the frontier with Zacatecas in general, where they're fighting it out with the people from the cowboy hat side of the war. I'm not going to say the name, but people will realize who those are. But they're basically fighting it out there. And when you go out there, there is...
This is cartel versus cartel, or people versus the cartel?
This is cartel versus cartel. And this is their... I mean, it's trench warfare. It's armored vehicles. It's drones. I recently posted a picture of one of these organizations now having some of these anti-drone guns, like this cartel guy with an anti-drone gun. So this is like a wild west spaces where they're actually fighting it out, trench warfare.
Do you think with all the drone stuff going on, like Ukraine and Russia, because I know Mexico's been like using drones for a while for drugs and other shit.
Yeah.
Do you think they took note from Mexicans, or it was just a natural evolution? That
I think it was a natural evolution. But I mean, people have to have been paying attention to some of the first.
Well, I know, like Al Qaeda and all them. That's where they were getting there from, all those rotten.mx videos or rotten.com videos.
Yeah,
there's a plug for us.
Gaffe has a interesting theory. He says that the Zetas, who were basically Army Special Forces guys, had
the Zetas were a cartel, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
The Zetas were basically some Special Forces members.
Are they still around?
They're gone. Their current iteration, or what is remaining of them, is the Northwestern Cartel, is what they call themselves.
So you think they got some of our guys from the U.S. to?
Oh, he says that, yeah, the U.S. basically trained them how to utilize means of projecting a horrible act once. So how to get on the news, how to make a horrible act show up in the press. And when the Zetas were doing their thing, they basically implemented that same strategy that they learned from their Special Forces training to, you know, like, if you're going to murder somebody, murder him during, if you want it to show up on the news the same day, you're going to have to probably murder that person before 10 in the morning. So, like, you would schedule, like, assassinations or events. Or you can utilize the internet to post videos of a certain act in a certain place and hashtag the your enemies in it so they could see it. And they're
probably the only ones still using hashtags.
I mean, they were the first ones to use them.
Shit.
For this type of stuff. That's an interesting theory, and I believe it. The origin of some of the ways that some of these these terrorist groups later on start utilizing social media to post some of their videos is definitely inspired by that. And if they were inspired by Mexico, and Mexico got its schooling of that from the Zetas, and the Zetas were definitely trained by the U.S. So it's like an interesting cycle or circle.
So we went we went to Spicy Town, and then
the dude we interviewed, hold on, you fucking asshole. We were interviewing this dude who wants to be like really, you know, anonymous.
Bro, I don't blame him.
He wants to be really anonymous. I don't blame him. Really anonymous. So he's like worried about any sort of identifying mark. And so we set up this interview room in this forgotten town. Mm-hmm. And
that's a good way to put it. Forgotten town. That's how I envision it.
Yeah. It's like this for like, yeah. Like
at one point, maybe it was
booming.
Maybe. Yeah.
But now it's just like
forgotten.
It's forgotten. People are somehow sustaining themselves by the economy that these people have there. He walks into he's like, we made these Sneak Reaper balaclavas,
which we will have for sale soon.
And they're cool as fuck. Like I saw it.
They're the nice
guy,
too.
The guy's like, hey, can I keep it?
We're like, yeah, we're already going to give it to you.
Which is wild. Like, I don't know. Hopefully, maybe he'll find some, it'll pop up somewhere, apparently.
Hopefully not.
But he puts it on and he's like, this is not enough. So he just leaves
the
room.
I still don't blame him.
So he leaves the room and he comes back wearing this bed sheet
that I think had pee pee on it.
I don't know. He made this poncho out of the bed sheet, but like none of us were ready for this. So all of a sudden, this ghost.
He's like, El Boo.
This dude comes in, and I'm like, I remembered like E.T. when it was Halloween and they tried to dress him up like a ghost.
Trying to smuggle his ass in the milk crate.
Yeah, like a ghost. Like, looking like a ghost. And somebody later on turned that into an image that I'm pretty upset about. But
oh yeah, I don't know who would do that.
Fucking asshole. What
an asshole.
Yeah, it was we're gonna have a few more trips like that in the near future where we've kind of hit a point where we're realizing that there are a lot of people out there that can't travel out to us, and we want to travel out to them to kind of share some of their stories.
I think it's therapeutic for them now. I don't even know if I should ask this. Do you think going around and talking to these people, how do I say this? Do the cartels care that people are talking about it? Or is the information past tense and they're already doing other stuff?
YouTubers in Mexico speak
or do about, they like it because it's kind
of
like
YouTubers in Mexico speak about this and like influencers speak about it and there's a bunch of people speaking about it and there are threats cast constantly. On my end, I try not to have an opinion on these individuals, you know.
I mean, too. Government isn't helping their town, and they can do it. Then
I mean, what I mean by that is, I'm not a news agency. I'm somebody that is going out there to try and put a perspective that is usually not covered, be it by talking to somebody like Sombra in Saltillo, who's like a member of one of these specialized units that is fighting the cartels, or this kid who escaped this organization, and you don't hear about that specific thing that much.
Just trying to let them tell their story with an unbiased opinion.
And there are people out there who have a side and they fight for it, and their opinion is usually one side or slanted. So I'm fully aware of all these things, and we had a few moments where they were like, oh, I can't tell you this because they would be upset. And it's was
fine,
usually,
you'll tell us. Thank you.
And it was usually related to details about these people, and they just don't want to be out there. But one thing that is very, very clear, just by going down there and having all these conversations with all these people across the country in Mexico, the government doesn't know what the fuck it's doing. I haven't seen a single sign of telling you, like, hey, whatever the current federal government is doing now to try and control all this shit, it's working. It's the opposite is true. These organizations have more control. I mean,
do you think that's because of their lack of efficiency of doing something, or it's because they're part of it, or both?
All of the people we talked to in these organizations told us they were trained by active and former military members. How can this? It's like if Delta Force showed up to Afghanistan and all the people they were fighting were being trained by a Delta Force member that left their unit a year ago.
Like spy versus spy.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if that makes an interesting equivalent, but, and they're still talking to these people, and there's still contact between both. So they're obviously compromised in a lot of ways.
The CIA is just like, yes.
I don't, that's another factor. That's another factor in all this. That's another fact. I mean, I don't know. Whatever is happening, I'm pretty sure now more than ever that there's no handling. There's no even beginning of trying to handle this problem.
Like Mexico by itself is not going to be able to do it.
It hasn't been able to do it. It hasn't been able to do it in such a way where it ends things. I mean, it's pacified certain parts of itself. Mexico City itself was always put in front of us as this gleaming example of how you can pacify parts of Mexico and safety and everything. It was a pretty safe city. It still is, and it was not that a few years ago. But now we just recently saw the assassination of the assistant and like two very close members of the cabinet of the La Jefa de Gobierno, basically the mayor of the city, our version of the mayor of New York, for people to have an equivalent. This is a high level assassination, basically. Somebody showed up with a motorcycle using gloves and a surgical mask, put 8 rounds in the secretary or the assistant, and 4 rounds in the traveler that was with the lady in the car, torso and head, double taps. Like there's a picture of the window, and these are groupings about that big.
Oof.
So somebody did their job, and you know, everybody's wondering like, what's going on? They informed the president of Mexico as she was doing this morning press briefing, which, you know, like I was saying before, some of these criminal organizations have learned exactly what times to do an act like that, so it shows up immediately on the news. And somebody probably did their math and knew that they was going to be in some way, shape, or form informed to the president at that time. I think it seems like orchestrated. Like, who did it? What message is being conferred? I don't know.
Because I don't follow the whole cartel thing, to be honest, very much. But what is like the main? What is the main? Like, how are they just a little bit in everything, or is there something like? Is trafficking, is drugs, like, do they have like a main source of, or is it just a little bit of everything?
They've already legitimized their businesses in many ways.
Oh, okay. I mean,
so they're in real estate, they're in transnational investments, they're in mining, they're in pharmaceuticals, legitimate pharmaceuticals, money exchange places.
What would happen if
professional
they just,
sports?
What would happen if they just
entertainment?
Let them, what would happen if they just let them fucking be? What would happen? You're just like, you know what? Just fucking do your thing. Just stop killing each other. Do your fucking thing.
Well, that's
don't kill us, or don't kill politicians. Just do your fucking thing.
I mean, I'm going to say something pretty controversial, but that's what the U.S. did with the mob, and they basically invited them into politics.
So
that
did work.
I mean, post prohibition. I mean, I think it did.
What if they just did that?
I don't know. I mean,
I mean, just to like be like, hey, look, we're never gonna beat you. Like,
the main reason this is a thing is because there's a giant market for it in the U.S.
Okay, that was gonna be my next comment.
And the main thing that is feeding,
we're like the instigators, in a way.
Yeah. I mean, there is a giant responsibility from the U.S. There is a responsibility from Mexico. Both are responsible. It is both have their hands dirty. When you hear things like, oh, like, we need to build a wall for this stuff not to come up here or not to, like, cross us. Like, it goes both ways. I mean, ammo and munitions and guns come from the U.S. Not always, but some of them do. And then drugs go upwards. So that's one side of it. Immigration is another side of it, which is right now we're going through this massive effort against it. And it is down and control is there. But there's still crossings going on. And there's still, you know,
now, would you say
smugglers doing.
You're talking about crossing into the U.S. Would you say the majority of people crossing are Mexican or are they coming further down south? Like South America,
the caravans are over. I think this is like, again, mostly.
Why did they stop? Because we're not, you know, Americans aren't like, yeah, come over here, or it's all political shit.
I mean, they were being funded, Eddie.
Yeah,
these caravans,
they all had like nice backpacks. They had like cinch sacks full of supplies and shit.
I mean, I'm not the first to say it, but these were being funded, and at some point. Probably because they lost an election, a lot of this funding dried up. That's one element. The other element is obviously the new administration and their stance on the border.
But right now, it probably the only people probably crossing over is probably Mexicans. You think? And I mean, blame them. Like,
I mean, it's people that can afford it in small groups, not mass migration, like not these mass caravans like the past. And they're still crossing. I just posted a video of this dude on a jet ski.
Oh yeah.
On a jet ski.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally you just go around. What do you think? Do you ever think about like what is the solution? Like, I personally know that the immigration process, like, it seems expensive, and like takes a long ass time.
Yeah.
Is the solution to spend money on the U.S. immigration system and maybe fast track the good people and like what is the solution? Like, is there a solution?
I mean, as somebody that's gone through the immigration process and is still in a lot of ways going through it, it's not easy. It's not easy for somebody doing it legally and being straight with it.
Yeah.
And it is.
I could see, like, honestly.
Yeah. It's.
If it were me, I'd probably fucking pet a coyote too. I'm just being straight up.
So, there's definitely a need for that to be. In some way, shape, or form.
But
modified.
It seems like they just throw like band-aids at like, let's build a wall, let's do all this. And like, why don't you fix the fucking system?
I mean, there's two things. One, the permissive laws in the United States that allow for the growth of some of these drug markets in the US is one factor. Mm-hmm. So that's one aspect of it that can be solved within the United States. Another aspect of this is the U.S.'s foreign policy and how it's acted in Mexico in its past. Yes, Mexico has a giant problem with corruption. And yes, the United States has been part of that corruption and also part of the... it's intervened in Mexican policy in the past. I mean,
we've intervened everywhere.
I know. But like Mexico specifically, there's been three presidents who have been confirmed to be CIA people who were working as presidents in Mexico. So there has to be some responsibility on behalf of the United States there. And I'm not asking for reparations or saying that, but it is like, hey, all of us have been like, hey, all of this, we've been pretty horrible neighbors to each other. NAFTA basically destroyed giant swaths of Mexico's agriculture and economy, pushing a giant swath of its population to go into irregular jobs and means. Again, not putting it solely on the United States, but there's a lot of shit that has gone on between both countries.
There isn't an easy fix to any of this.
I mean, right now, the main thing is this. The U.S. needs to realize that Mexico is its best trading partner at the moment. And whatever future the United States has as a superpower is probably going to be dependent on the industrial plant that is already existing in Mexico that it can then integrate into its greater scheme. China is going away. Globalization is going away. The United States needs to reindustrialize at an absurd level in the next 10 years, or else it's not going to be competitive. And I think whatever is being done right now, or whatever effort is being done against cartels, and how this is suddenly at the top of the list of topics, is not specifically about criminality that they're trying to combat. It is about stabilizing the only chance it has for an industrial plant that is going to be able to sustain it for the future. It's trying to, like,
carry a lot of goods. Like, I don't think people realize how much, like, of your really popular brands are already made down here. And what's crazy is you brought this up earlier, or brought this up a couple days ago. A lot of really popular brands are made here. But then, like, if you guys, you know, wanted to buy it here in Mexico, it's like way more expensive.
Yeah. Again,
like, that's crazy.
Something has to be like figured out there. There has to be some sort of commerce zone set up where it's a North American zone or something where Mexico can be competitive and also can be included in some of the aspects of the economy. Illegal immigration is illegal for a reason, and that's probably related to the cost of labor. And at some point, we're going to have to figure all of that out, or not, and
keep going the way things are going, which is like this, I don't know.
Yeah.
Kind of a mess.
We're going to need each other before the end of whatever we're heading towards. And man, it's a beautiful country.
I feel like maybe I'm just ignorant on this, but I feel like we get a lot more from Mexico than we do Canada. Like, what do we get from Canada? Like, what do we buy from Canada?
I mean, I'm not gonna shit on Canada. Probably a lot, but yeah.
Syrup?
The relationship Bacon? Between the United States and Canada versus the relationship between the United States and Mexico is very unfair. There's a lot of unfairness there. And again, it's probably related to the culture, probably related to some of the aspects of the instability that Mexico has because the United States decided to close the Caribbean route for drugs. And then those routes basically turned into ground routes into Mexico, which created the current shitstorm we have. And again, there's enough responsibility for everybody, but it's time for all of us to admit that it is a us problem and not a them problem.
So you're real, when it comes to Mexican food, you're like, TJ is the Mecca. How did you feel about Guadalajara's food? So I'll tell you what you go ahead first, and then I'll tell you what I thought.
I don't like it.
No?
I mean,
did you have a meal where you were like, it was good?
Nah, not really.
No?
No.
I had one. I had that one that the guys that Johnny's Guides took us to. It was one restaurant that had really good El Pastor, but they definitely, I mean, they seem like they do a lot of birria there.
Yeah.
But it's like very, like, super wet. It's like just like a little bit of meat and like birria water.
For Guadalajara, all I like is the barbacoa.
Set.
Steamed goat meat. And
did you have any there?
No, there was not this time. The tortas ahogadas are great, which is we just weren't in any place where they had them. And chamorro is amazing. Again, we didn't have any of that because we were running around.
Okay, we barely got to eat. It was like we were averaging like a meal a day.
Next time I'll take you to McDonald's, Guadalajara.
So we can get that premium choro. Fuck. But overall, I think it was a very, it was a good, worthwhile trip. We picked up, I would have liked to spend more money and buy more Santa Muerte related products, but it's just, it's not there. I'm really hoping Mexico City has more for us, but we're buying a lot of these small botanicas. We're buying like almost everything they got. Besides, like, everybody always has the same statues, and that's not really what we're looking for. Like, we don't want to pick up what you can buy in the US or Amazon or eBay or whatever. We're looking for like the I specifically am looking for in the dark corners of stuff that has a lot of dust on it and shit, and that just looks old. That's the stuff that I want to sell. And what's weird too is it seems like you would think that would be more popular, like the really old vintage stuff. But in Mexico specifically, it seems like the newer stuff sells more. Yeah. Like why do you think that is? That like
it's such a new thing in general as a spiritual practice.
Public, so they'd rather public. The new stuff because it's like it's new and like this dusty shit. They're like,
I mean,
I think the dusty stuff and especially the old style skulls and skeletons, like I the ones that are more like maybe a little bit more artistic expression rather than looking like a skull. Like that's the ones I really like. And it seems like too, like when we post stuff about that, that's more like those amber ones we got where we bought every single one. Like everybody's like, hey, when do those come out? I wonder why our audience and myself included like the more artistic stylized kind of stuff. Whereas down here they want like it to look like a skeleton. Yeah, and
I don't know. I have a pretty weird substantial collection of older stuff. And I know it's something that people just don't keep or don't think about collecting or hoarding, I guess. So like when it comes
is that
up,
it? Maybe because they're not collecting. Is that why?
Probably it.
Okay. That makes sense, man. But I think it was a good trip. It was spicy.
We survived. Mexico City's next, though, and that's going to be interesting.